What's the Data Centric Podcast with Matt Kimball and Steve McDowell? I'm Steve McDowell.
And I'm Matt Kimball.
Hi, Matt. How you doing, man?
Doing well. How are you, Stevie Ray?
How's the weather in Texas? Has spring arrived?
Spring has arrived. We're supposed to get so my kid has a baseball game in the morning. They do some high school games on weekends, which is weird, but we're supposed to get severe thunderstorms. So I don't know what's going on, but it's been in the 80s, which is nice.
So we're having severe thunderstorms too. My kid plays, I have a daughter, she plays travel softball. And man, we got to be 3 hours away at 8 a.m.
Oh, yes. Wow. I'll tell you, we'll hit that in the summer once the high school season starts. And that is a brutal schedule, man. Those long drives and then sitting in the miserable weather watching.
It is. Now, she plays school ball too, and you can't play travel ball and school ball simultaneously. But here in North Carolina, I don't know how it is down there in Texas, girl softball players are second class citizens. The boys get the fields in the spring, and the girls play in the fall.
So here in Texas, everybody gets their own field. So,
you know why? Because you got wide open vistas and
wide open places. And how's that feeling?
I don't know, but I tell you what, that's when I want a self-driving car, is when I have to lag my sorry butt out of bed at 4:30 in the morning to drive for 200 miles.
So you can watch a softball game.
So I can sleep, man.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you, dude. I know. We did last summer. I swear to God, I was on the road, I think 8 weeks in a row, going all over the state of Texas and surrounding states to watch high school baseball.
And Texas is a big state.
It's a big state. It's a big ass state. You can if you need to, but man, it is big.
I think we can say ass on a PG rated podcast. I'm not sure.
Good. Maybe we are rated. No one ever.
No. Anyway. Right, I'll use that as a transition. You know what kicks ass, Matt?
What kicks ass, Stevie Ray?
Intel's new Cascade Lake part. So they had a big party this week. You were there?
I was there, man. I'm still recovering from it. I have a hangover. I don't have a hangover. I'm just kidding.
I don't drink.
I don't.
You don't drink.
It was. You know what was interesting about that that event?
Tell me.
And this is what I like about what Intel is doing. And I mean that sincerely. You know, so it was the launch of – they didn't launch just Cascade Lake. They called it their Data-Centric Innovation Day. And by the way, our attorneys are speaking with their attorneys about the use of data-centric.
They are. No, the Patent and Trademark Office is involved. They do that, though, and I don't know if you're about to head here, right? So I cover storage, and the whole storage world has been waiting on these Optane persistent memory parts to become available on servers, right? And if you're not familiar with Optane persistent memory, this is essentially an SSD that sits in a DIMM slot, and you can treat it as DRAM, it's byte addressable, or you can treat it as storage, but running not at NVMe speeds, but at the speed of your memory bus, right? Yeah. So this, everybody's been waiting on Cascade Lake to enable that, right? And you put those pieces together, and then Intel starts to tell an extremely compelling and complete story. Well, I didn't mean to jump in and take your candy, Matt. Go ahead, tell me.
No, you're right. But they even took it a step further, right? Because they, and this was the theme of the day, right? It was move faster, store more, and compute everything or process mm-hmm. everything. And so they took everything from the device that's sitting out there as an Internet of Things thing, if you will, to the network, to the edge, to the cloud, or to the network edge, to the cloud, to the data center edge, to the data center core. And they had solutions that fit into every single one of those buckets, right? So from Ethernet cards to low power CPUs that enable high performing NFV functions and in networking functions as a general, to uh-huh. the storage aspect, to the compute, they had something that kind of that covered that entire continuum, which to me is saying we get that the world is, you know, Cascade Lake is a great part, and it is, you know, we can go through the speeds and feeds, but it's impressive, up to 56 cores, 12 memory channels, lots of memory capacity.
That's 56 cores. That's 56 cores in a socket.
In a socket, yes.
Right, so you could do 112 cores in 2P. That is insane.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you're talking a big honking part, right? But they realize it's not just about that. It's about all of these adjacencies that kind of that help the modern data center. And even within that part, you know, it's not just about pure integer performance. You know, how fast can I get my clock going, and how well can I process at every clock tick, if you will. It's about, you know, putting in the functions, the instructions that help with machine learning and deep learning. It's about improving the security componentry and fixing all of those kind of, you know, those soft underbellies that existed before and adding to that.
So did they talk about new acceleration technologies, or you said machine learning, deep learning? Does that imply that they're incorporating some inference logic in their Xeon, or is it?
Yeah, they have a new extension, if you will, or instruction called DL Boost that's built into Xeon. And it's used to improve the performance of Xeon at performing learning, deep learning, machine learning, and in inference functions. I don't have all the details on how it does that, but you take that, you take their AVX-512 extension, which is another one of those kind of HPC accelerator instructions,
right.
And you're talking about a part that kind of handles all of those emerging workloads, you know, kind of today. So, you know, you're able to have an impact today. You're able to, these are going to have relevance tomorrow when, you know, when machine learning and inference is actually taking root in mass in the enterprise. I know it's starting to, but when it really does take hold, these parts are still going to be relevant and serve a pretty strong function.
Well, sure. And then coupled with those, and I don't know how much they talked about this week. I wasn't there. You were. They have their machine learning or inference FPGA as well, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of sits aside for those applications that need that.
That's right. AngelX, yeah.
So the event was really all about telling a more complete story. It's just like Intel in the old days, right, where they did soup to nuts server. Yeah. So they're talking about CPU cores. They're talking about the new Optane stuff. What's new and different on networking, or is it just that they have a story there?
Well, they've always had a story, right? They had the numbers up, and I can't remember them and cite them off the top of my head. But, you know,
nobody wants numbers, so just tell the story.
Yeah, they do. They have pretty strong numbers and they have a pretty strong presence in the space, but they released, it's called the 800 series Ethernet card, which is a dual port, 100 gig out of both ports, Ethernet card. So, you know, aggregate 200 gig coming out of that thing. In addition to, so you have that sitting, you know, down at the server or you know, somewhere. And then in addition, they have the D1600, Xeon D1600, which is their low power Xeon part that addresses network functioning, right? And their extensions built into that, that help enable the movement of traffic through for priority workloads or priority traffic, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, they even in the plumbing, if you will, they've looked at how to take that, all that IP they have that's built into Xeon and elsewhere, and apply it for goodness. And I think this, to me, that's what I find truly, truly impressive. So it's whether that data is sitting on the server or on a device somewhere, you know, its journey from device to cloud to server, or device to wherever. You know, there is Intel technology along the way that helps, you know, improve the movement of that, the security of that data, and the processing of that data, which to me, you know, if you're going to tell a story in today's world, you kind of have to take that approach. It's not just about one, you know, single bit of technology that helps the overall solution. You have to talk to the whole solution now.
Yeah, you do. And I'm glad to hear Intel tell that story. And it's... as awesome a part as Cascade Lake is, you know, at the end of the day, it's incremental, right? We already had a pretty good Xeon part, and we're doing our normal, you know, yearly, bi-yearly big architectural update.
Yeah.
The thing that's truly new, right, in the announcement, so I want to talk a little bit about this, is Optane persistent memory. So we've been talking about, this is based on 3D crosspoint technology that was Intel co-developed with Micron. And Micron doesn't yet have a part, but Intel does. And it required some changes to the memory bus. Intel has a new memory bus called DDR-T. mm-hmm. right, that Optane sits on. But this week was really the first time that we got a peek at the capabilities and capacities of these Optane parts, right? So now you can put this is incredible. So they're shipping up to 500 gigabytes in a DIMM slot, which says on a 2P system, a two-socket system, you can support up to 3 terabytes with Cascade Lake.
Yep.
So think about that. You got 3 terabytes of persistent memory on top of whatever the RAM capacity is, and 112 cores, and probably a 2U package, right?
So where do you see utility for that? I mean, because those are impressive numbers. Who's going to use?
They're impressive numbers, and they're not cheap numbers either. I'll tell you that. So it's going to be a path, right? Let me say this about the Optane parts. The Optane parts exist in two modes. So you can treat them like a disk drive, right, with the right software on top. Mm-hmm. You can treat them as memory extension, right? So if you want some persistent memory that can also be used for processing, you can leverage it for that. And the guys that are taking advantage of that right now are the big there's a class of software applications called in-memory compute, right? So the big caching engines, the NoSQL databases, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of class of applications. And then there's work coming out of a standards body called SNIA, which controls kind of the storage interfaces, which is, you know, putting the right set of software interfaces on top of that. So the software guys can leverage this without a lot of heavy lifting. And we're already seeing performance numbers out of the in-memory compute world that are amazing, right? And where the numbers come into play is not in the performance of the applications, but oftentimes in the restart time, right? Where you can take SQL Server, for example, Microsoft demoed this a few months ago. You could take SQL Server and go from, you know, many minutes or dozens of minutes of recovery time for a terabyte database down to a few seconds, right? Because I'm not reading that off of spinning platters. I'm reading that off of something attached to my DIMM slots.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. One of the things they talked about at the launch, just to bolster what you're saying, is they talked about doing an SAP HANA recovery and how without Optane, it's about a 55-minute recovery time. With Optane,
right, exactly.
4 minutes. 4 minutes.
Exactly. And you might say, so what? But if you're running SAP HANA in an enterprise, right, that's downtime that's impacting a big percentage. Well, I don't know how big a percentage, but impacting a large swath of your organization, right?
It's literally millions of dollars of potential lost business or, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I think, you know, in the near term, Optane PM is going to distinguish from Optane. It lives in an SSD slot, which is kind of a whole other category of discussion. But Optane persistent memory, in the near term, it's going to be all about checkpointing. It's going to be about fast recovery, you know, in applications of that ilk.
So, hey, Steve, one of the things I thought they talked about, and you hit on this, the two modes, kind of the app mode and the memory mode.
Yep.
They talked about using Optane as an affordable alternative to DRAM. Have you looked at that at all, or have you read up on that at all?
They didn't release pricing yet, so I think it's premature for me to comment on that.
Okay.
But I will say, there was a lot of pent up announcements around Intel's event, right? People can't talk about their Cascade Lake and Optane products until Intel releases them, right? So you saw this on the server side. I don't know if there's anything terribly interesting to talk about here, but I think nearly every vendor, every server OEM came out, right, with strong statements support around, you know, new Cascade Lake SKUs. All of these guys are talking about Optane persistent memory support, right?
Yeah.
But there's also been some innovative stuff coming out. So I had a brief, I met with this, there's a startup called Memverge, which came out of stealth mode on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Coincident with the Intel announcement.
Yeah.
And I got to spend some time with their CEO, Charles Pan. And what these guys are doing is they're looking at Optane persistent memory and they're saying, what if I could, you know, much like people are doing storage virtualization across drives, across a rack, he's saying, what if I do that for Optane persistent memory? And they built this kind of cluster of devices where he's virtualizing essentially this Optane persistent memory, and you could use it either as memory extension. I want more DRAM for an application for a little while, mm-hmm. or I can treat it as a disk drive and get all of the performance benefits of living on the memory bus, right? So they're off piloting this quarter, I think, technology that's doing that in kind of a clustered environment, right, over Rocky, Ethernet, or InfiniBand.
Yeah.
So I'm only saying that to say, not that Memverge, you know, I don't know if they have the right or wrong approach, but what I'm saying that I'm bringing this up to say that this is opening the door, I think, to a tremendous new way of thinking about persistent memory, right? We're not talking about disk drives now. We're talking about data that stays alive,
yeah,
across power cycles and how I might leverage that.
You know, it's funny you say that because it almost feels like, you know, everybody knew Optane was coming, right? It was mm-hmm. obvious, and it wasn't meant to be a secret, but, you know, I mean, everyone knew. So everyone was anticipating this, but I don't think everybody has fully grasped or wrapped their head around how potentially how disruptive this could actually be.
Exactly. And you know, I think the researchers have, right? One of the classic conferences I go to, I don't talk a lot about, I go to the technical conferences, I go to the SNEA stuff, I go to the Flash Memory Summit, all of these
cool conferences.
Yeah, where all the cool kids are hanging out, right?
Do they have like lightsaber night at a Spock night? What is it?
I used to do the, and they used to be full of laser pointers, and we'd have laser pointer wars.
That's how you damaged your eyes.
So here's what I'm saying, right? So we're saying, you know, I think it's important. You know, I always try to come back to, you know, as a technologist, yeah, this is cool. And kind of the engineering me sees the potential. But I'm thinking about, you know, why did the data center guys care? And I think very quickly, very, very quickly, the software world is going to figure out how to use these parts,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes sense if you're looking at new servers to buy something that's enabled for the future. And these Canyon Lake ones are really the first ones that are enabled for Optane PM because it requires electrical changes, right? You cannot run this on legacy systems.
Right.
So even if you're not deploying something with Optane PM today, you know, I think it's worthwhile to think about putting that capability into the data center so that when you do run, you know, SQL Server's taking advantage of that. At some point that becomes just how we deploy applications.
Yeah.
So we're at kind of stage zero, but if you're forward thinking, don't buy the DIMMs necessarily, but make sure those slots are there.
Yeah.
That's how I see this.
SQL Server 2019 is Optane aware. It's not about being Optane aware. It's Optane optimized is a better way to put
right.
it.
Right.
And to put a finer point on something you said about compatibility. Mm-hmm. So Cascade Lake itself is socket compatible with Purley, with the previous generation. You're talking about Optane support within the box, not Cascade Lake itself. So somebody can take a current server and drop a Cascade Lake in.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. You're right. What I'm really saying is you need a Cascade Lake design motherboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me ask this question though. I know it's early days for Optane, and it's
question. I just want to add one more thing to what you said, and that is that the thing with Cascade Lake, and you hit on it with research guys and you know the software community. The thing with Optane is it is going to have an incredible and measurable business impact. And that to me is what makes it so disruptive. People are going to see, or organizations are going to see the real value in this. You know, you talk about, you know, recovery times, but think about processing times and the ability to serve up content and data that much faster or analyze that much faster. It's going to have a real impact on business.
It will. And the thing that we need to watch is, you know, how fast did that software community emerge around it? And the other piece of this discussion, so right now this is a sole vendor solution, yeah. right? Intel manufactures Optane and it only works on Intel manufactured or Intel designed CPUs, right? Mm-hmm. the software world around this is writing to a more abstract set of interfaces. And you're going to see, I mean, let's not forget that Optane was a collaboration with Micron. Yeah. You know, I think Micron is focusing their efforts right now more on kind of the QLC and mid-range storage where, you know, there's a lot of volume, a lot of revenue, and still some margin.
Yeah.
You know, Optane is very new silicon process. You know, they haven't sold any before this quarter.
Right.
So I think Micron is, and I've not talked to Micron about this, Steve's speculation, right? I think Micron is rightly kind of sitting back, letting Intel go build and enable this market. But then they're going to come out with a part that may work, you know, across the industry with Cascade Lake or, right, and here's where I want it to go, AMD EPYC.
Yeah.
Because if you want persistent memory, you cannot use you know, Optane with EPYC.
Correct.
Now, the other interesting announcement that came out exactly this week, and it was kind of low key and not a lot of details, but they put it out there, which is AMD is collaborating with Western Digital, and Western Digital has something called Memory Extension Drive, mm-hmm. which, you know, may not give you kind of the same performance latency as Optane, but it's the same basic model, mm-hmm. right? And if they support kind of the same APIs on top of that, you know, SNIA is producing for persistent memory in general, then that enables kind of the same software to work across.
Yeah.
It's still very early days. Intel's an early mover. You know, I don't think AMD is going to be locked out long term. They're going to, you know, Western Digital wants a piece of this.
Sure.
Micron's going to jump in. I think when, you know, you and I both have a little bit of semiconductor in our background. My guess is they're waiting for kind of the yields to shake out and for the economics to be there.
Yeah.
There's some speculation in some press and analysts, right, that Optane is not making any money for Intel. But, you know, I don't have any detail there. But that wouldn't surprise me being very early days of a brand new process.
Yeah. And I know that they, and you probably know this better than I do. I think, in fact, that Optane had been pushed out a little bit because of the yields and they weren't seeing the right. that they were hoping for. But, you know, you're right. I think with AMD, obviously there will be some response. I wish there was more detail around the Western Digital partnership. I think it would give a little bit more strength to the partnership itself, right? Instead of sounding and feeling very reactionary and, hey, don't forget us. By giving a little detail, I think it would give the market maybe a little bit more confidence in what they're doing. And I don't mean that as a negative. It's just a, you know, there's a story to tell there. Tell the story, not just we're going to do something or we have a partnership.
Yeah, right. And you know, you and I, you know, as analysts, we like to, you know, we focus on the bright, shiny new stuff, right? But the bread and butter of the enterprise is still, you know, just kind of mainstream workhorse servers that don't need Optane today and don't need this capability. And in that sense, it's still quite a horse race between EPYC and kind of the mid-range Xeons.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, so here, a couple of interesting points on that. And you're absolutely right that the thing is, though, and you know this as well as I do, when you get into an enterprise IT organization, the standards for those mid-range workloads are determined by the needs of the highest performing workloads and the highest need workloads, right? So my AI, my back office crunching, my SAP mm-hmm. environment, whatever that might be, that is the most performant and most performant needy workload is going to be the architecture that I set the standard for across the entire enterprise. So if you win at the top, chances you're going to win at in the mid-range as well, because it's just easier from a manageability and a cost perspective. The other thing is, and this is something we didn't hit on, but I had it written down to talk about was, you know, Intel is claiming about a 30 to 33% increase in their mid-range performance parts, which is interesting because they're still at 14 nanometer, which most listeners don't care about. But I mean, they're still at a bigger process node than AMD. So that's telling you that it is optimizations they've made to the core. It's some extensions they've put into the ISA to increase performance. But it's a very significant performance gain for a non-process node update, if you will, or refresh to the SKU. So I'll be curious especially when Rome comes out, EPYC 2, to see what that mid-range performance looks like between the two, because it is going to be, you're right, it's going to be a horse race.
It is. And the other thing that we should mention, right, is AMD is being very generous with pricing relative to Intel with the Xeons. There was a story, I sent it to you last week, right? Amazon AWS instituted some Epic instances, which are, I want to say, almost half or maybe a little under half the price of comparably performing Xeon-based EC2 instances.
Which is very interesting. You wonder, I think you even mentioned this in conversation at some point about how Amazon usually kind of doesn't promote promote in that way. It makes you wonder
if AMD's marketing is involved some way.
Maybe.
So this is going to beg the question, and I don't follow the pricing is not my thing, right? I follow technology. If Amazon is able to give that kind of discount, I'm wondering if the tier one OEMs, I wonder if the tier one OEMs are also passing on the cost differential between Xeons and Epic, right? Are my Epic servers cheaper from Dell or Lenovo or HPE, not to call any vendor out on the,
Oh, they are. They are. There is, you know, AMD is leveraged on, has been trying to leverage. Well, step back for a second, right? AMD took a very measured approach to the market when they came back into the server space, right? You remember they kind of, they jumped out in 2012, jumped back in 2017, and they took a very measured approach. The first step was go get a footprint within the big cloud players because, you know, that was the, believe it or not, the easiest path back into the marketplace for them. So it was do that with Epic. Get whatever enterprise business you can get, start driving your channel. And then when Epic 2 comes out or Rome or whatever they're going to call it comes out, that is when you start going after mainstream enterprise. So, you know, you've seen them make a lot of noise within within cloud. You've seen them make some noise within the HPC space. They have very good floating point performance on Epic. But they've also gone out with this notion of, you know, single socket versus dual socket, you know, don't pay a quote unquote Intel tax, which I don't necessarily, I think is the right approach, but they've certainly gone and talked about the single socket capability or two socket capability in a single socket. And even the comparably configured servers have a significant price advantage over the Intel equivalent. You can see it both from the OEMs and through the channel. So, you know, they're definitely playing the price game, but you have to think Intel will respond in kind, right? Because, you know, they're in a protect your market kind of posture, which means you pull all your levers to make sure the other guys can't get in.
They are. And to circle all this back to where we started, right? Pull all your levers includes telling a story that says Intel's a single source technology provider, soup to nuts. It's going to be better together. We do networking. We do persistent memory. We do processing. So they're there from a marketing and story perspective, moving a little bit away from all of these speeds and fees, which are just mind-boggling numbers to me at this point. And talking more about a story. Because at the end of the day, right, I think there's not a part on the market, especially at the high end, that can't service your workload to within what you want.
Right.
We're almost over-serving. And at this point, it's, you know, how many workloads can I squeeze onto a set of cores, right? It's all about containers and virtualization. It's less about, you know, like the old days we would talk about, you know, how does SAP HANA work on this processor? Now it's how does SAP work in a container on this processor with six other containers? Right. So it's changing, and Intel, you know, I like the story that they're telling. Is there anything else you want to say about the Intel event before we move on?
The last thing I'll hit really quickly is the fact that all of the major OEMs had some play in it, right? And they all used most of them used the Cascade Lake launch as an opportunity to refresh their product lines and tell a bigger story, right? So like Dell talked about Cascade Lake support, Optane support, which was great. Talked about performance. And if you go up to spec, you can see a lot of new benchmarks. But they also used it as an opportunity to talk about some improvements they've made to OpenManage Enterprise, Which I'm telling you, there's a great story there that is not told enough by them or told in, not told enough by them. And some things they've done within OpenManage Enterprise to make it easier and more complete for IT administrators. Lenovo talked about performance and security. Big, updating everything from servers down to their Nutanix, or not just Nutanix, but all of their HCI-like appliances and configurations. HPE has been a little bit more guarded in saying anything, but they were on stage showing improved security with Lockheed Martin and Intel. And Cisco likewise talked about breadth of portfolio. So everybody was using this as a kind of chance to tell a bigger story. And in the Select Solutions, which is the kind of the architectures that Intel builds with partners, Huawei, Inspur, and others also have a big story to tell. So the market, the hardware ecosystem, and even the software ecosystem really rallied around this and used this as an opportunity to promote and amplify their own messaging as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the timing is good because over the next 10 weeks, I think, I don't know when Cisco's conference is, but all the major server vendors are having their annual conferences. I know we're going to Dell EMC World in about 2 weeks as we record this. 2 weeks later, we're at the Lenovo Data Center one, and then 3 weeks later, we're at HPE Discover. Yeah. So I think, there we'll see far more detailed kind of how they intend to leverage this. And I expect HPE, didn't want to get lost in the noise, and they typically do a lot around Discover. So I'm expecting good announcements there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they'll have plenty. Yeah.
So moving on,
Stevie Ray.
There's some storage news. I just want to hit on it briefly. I don't want to spend 20 minutes on any of these. Thankfully it's storage, so you won't find the need to go off and
ramble. So boring. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So there's a storage startup called Accelero, right? And what Accelero does, we talk about Optane PM changing the game a little bit, and kind of mainstream storage. We're seeing the same thing with NVMe, right? And NVMe is a flash storage interface. It replaces kind of traditional disk, like SATA controllers, right? So it takes all of the overhead and latency typically involved in disk controllers and removes that. So now I have essentially flash that's directly attached to a PCI, if you want to think about it simply. Mm-hmm. What Accelero does is virtualize those across servers and pool them, right? So now I can have a virtual storage array that's going across some number of servers that all have NVMe-equipped drives running my Accelero software. This startup is an interesting kind of set of technologies that are showing how we can leverage NVMe in kind of a fun new way. The news, though, today, and this was announced yesterday as we record this, Lenovo's partnering up with them is going to sell Accelero vSAN solutions. Oh, wow. So this, we talked a lot about Lenovo and we talked about server market share a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of podcasts back. They entered into a relationship with NetApp last year. Their JV kicked off in January. So Lenovo doesn't do their own storage. And it's a heavy investment and a hard game to get into. So I think, given where they are in their evolution, this whole partner for storage is the right approach for them. Yeah. The NetApp JV, we've talked about that before, I think makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense for NetApp in China. But I'm really thrilled to see Lenovo Data Systems guys stepping up and partnering with some of these more innovative thinking approaches, right? I'd like to see them do more of this.
It seems almost like the smart thing to do, right? I mean, you don't have to make the big investments and resource investments. These partnerships just and you can be more agile through these partnerships, right?
You can. And what I like about Accelero's technology, right, is when you think about virtualized storage, you immediately go to vSAN from VMware, who kind of owns that market. So this is maybe a lower touch approach to that for Lenovo's data center customers. And it could be a differentiator if they play this right. So they didn't say a lot about the relationship, except that it's there and they're working together. And this, again, the Lenovo conference is coming up in about a month. So I'm sure we'll hear far more about that in their storage strategy. I want to highlight it because I think it's significant. And when we look at who's growing in the data center, across the board, Lenovo is just, you know, putting up numbers that far exceed the market. Yep. Now, again, they're in growth phase, right? And at some point they level off and we equalize between the top three vendors. But they're a player and they're going to stick around, and they're thinking, they're, you know, thinking aggressively about this.
Yep.
The other piece of storage news I want to bring up, Pure Storage acquired a small company called CompuVerde. And what CompuVerde does, they're a 20-person company out of Switzerland, and they do this virtual NAS, right? This network attached storage. And that's been a weakness for Pure. Now, Pure has always had kind of filer technology, but the oomph behind that was always their hardware. So CompuVerde is coming into the fold and is going to provide some really high-end network attached storage capabilities. Pure tells us that's going to show up in their flash arrays in about a year. Kind of the interesting geopolitics of this is CompuVerde is reported to be the technology behind IBM Spectrum NAS.
Oh.
So we don't yet know what that's going to do to that. That is a compelling kick-ass product. Now, I asked Pure Storage directly and the CompuVerde executives, and we had a call with them, you know, what about that? And they said, you know what, we're going to target our hardware first. We want to keep the relationship with IBM alive. We don't think it competes with them in the near term, right? I think longer term it does.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Pure very definitely has designs on hybrid and multi-cloud, and this would be a great set of technologies to stick up into the cloud to do file services that kind of, you know, span on-prem and cloud. But that's further down the road, right? Their initial target, they told us, I don't know that I can say the timelines, but let's just say over the next year, is to get this technology fully integrated into their flash arrays so they can have hardware filer that's going to be extremely competitive with, you know, what NetApp sells today and some of the Dell EMC technology.
Yeah.
All right. We've been rambling on for a little over half an hour, so it might be time to stop
Hold
this.
And, I have two questions I want to include.
Yeah.
So the first is, it's a question for you and maybe for people who listen. I'd love to hear some responses. So I have a Windows laptop. I have an iPhone. Uh-huh. And I've seen you do wonderful things between your MacBook and your iPhone that I just cannot do between my Windows laptop. And I'm wondering if it makes sense to move to a kind of all Apple. I know.
That's a big step for you, Matt. You were the last one to give up your Windows phone.
I know. And then I went from Windows to Android, and I'm still wondering whether I should go back to my Pixel or not. But it's the lack of integration between an iPhone and a Windows 10 laptop is starting to bug the crap out of me. So I'm wondering if you or anybody has thoughts on whether it's worth the move. I mean, whether an old person like me would have a problem getting used to the new, Mac OS or.
No, I don't think you would. So I've been using Mac. I was a Windows guy, and yeah, to the point where, you know, in my engineering career, I was a Windows device driver guy and did storage, right? I was Windows hard and true until about 8 years ago when I took a job where, you know, organization was delivering some iOS software, and I moved to Apple and I bought an iPhone so I could run the software, right? I loved my Android phone. Mm-hmm. But you're right. The integration that they delivered and continue to deliver, I don't know that I could live right now without the iMessage coordination between my iPhone and my Mac, right? So I'm sitting right here with my Mac open, and as text messages come in, it's right here on my desktop.
Yeah.
I love the AirPlay functionality, right? If I have a file on my phone or a picture on my phone or one on my PC, I can just share it with the push of a button.
Yeah.
I also wear an Apple Watch. I'm not an Apple fanboy, I'll tell you that. I have complaints about all of this
stuff. Wait, hold on. You just spent the last 2 minutes talking about the loveliness and amazingness of the integration.
Yeah, all right. I'm also a fairly serious photographer, and I hate the camera on my iPhone, especially relative to what I can buy in Android phones. But I'm not willing to walk away from that and give up kind of the sharing capabilities.
Yeah.
Right. I love, and it really comes down, I think, you know, I use AirDrop quite a bit, but it really comes down to iMessage.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of, you know, I start a browsing session on my phone and want to continue it on my laptop. You know, I don't care about that. But I do love that I can have this open right here and I can do all my text and MMS stuff right here on my desktop or my phone.
Well, I'll tell you, man, one of the things I loved about the Pixel in Android was the ability, capability right there was the being able to do, have my text environment on my Windows laptop and text and send and receive texts directly from my laptop. It's so much easier than, you know, doing it over the phone. And that's,
I know. And it, and it's frustrating for your friends too, Matt. And I'll tell you why.
I don't have friends. I only have you. So friend.
Well, yeah, it's frustrating for your friend because, you know, we're recording this podcast on a service called Zencastr, right? And so I go online, I create the link, and then I text it to you. And you immediately text me back and say, I can't do anything with this link on my phone. Can you email it to me?
Indeed. Indeed. That is a real world use case. Yes.
But here's what I'll tell you, and you and I do almost the exact same job, right? So I will say that apart from some photo and video editing stuff, 100% of my work life is either in a Microsoft Office product or a web browser.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my web browser, I don't use Safari. I use Chrome. Yeah. You know, and on my iPhone, I don't use Apple Maps. I use Google Maps. I like all the Google services, but I like the level of integration that Apple gives me between the devices.
So how is the Office environment on your Mac? It's fine, no problem.
It's identical.
Okay, so there. You remember Microsoft used to cripple some of the functionality? Or not?
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. I think this is the new Microsoft, right? The old guard has left.
No more.
I can't tell the difference. I can't. And the rest of the More Insights organization, by and large, you know, are using Microsoft products. I've never had an interoperability problem. Yeah. You know, I share, you know, we write research papers for clients. I do PowerPoint with revision control on and this and that. I've never once had an interoperability problem. Yeah. And we're sharing files and doing collaborative editing using Office 360 online.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about upgrading my laptop later this year. Maybe I'll give you a hand-me-down. I will say I use a MacBook Pro, and you know, there's a lot of stuff online about how crappy the keyboard is, and it is. I cannot stand to do long-form typing directly on the laptop.
Oh, okay.
But they're addressing that apparently in the new product refreshes.
Are all the MacBooks like that with crappy?
No. This is strictly on the Pro. So I have the high end.
Okay.
The $2,500 MacBook.
I'm not spending $2,500 on a laptop.
Well, I know, but I bought this because
you're cool. You know. Because you're Stevie Ray effing McDowell. That's why.
No, because so this is how geeky I am, right? So my hobby right now is machine learning and artificial intelligence. So I've been doing a lot of stuff with that. I also am involved in some startups where I'm doing technology stuff, right? So I run IDEs on here, I run Dockers on here. I've got like Postgres in a Docker right now from kind of my software as a service startup my wife is doing. So I need the heavy horsepower. Yeah. If I were just doing this analyst job, I would buy the, you know, the $1,000 MacBook.
Would you do the MacBook or the Air?
I don't know. We can talk about this.
All right. Last question, not question, but comment. So listen, you know, you and I worked at a startup together back in the late 90s, Network Engines, right?
I was a high school intern.
You were a high school intern. That was the beginning of the Me Too movement. Or He Too. So I, strangely enough, kind of, you know, and this is all coincidental, I got reached out to by Nick Shaw and Jerry Gua. And I'm always talking like Sushil and Mary Ellen and, you know, a bunch of other folks. But Nick and Jerry reached out to me, I think, after listening to one of our podcasts and realizing how stupid we are. And Nick, I think there was some job anniversary thing that I congratulated him on or something. Anyway, the point is everybody wants to do a Network Engines kind of reunion up in Boston over the summer. We need to set something up.
Let's do it. It's been 20 years since we went public. And now our three listeners are all feeling like my wife at a business dinner because they have no idea who we're talking about.
So what is Network Engines, Steve? Do a quick pitch on
Network Engines was, oh, they were pioneers. They did the very first 2-socket 1U box, which they promptly licensed to IBM, who learned from it. then they quickly pivoted over to being the first server appliance company, right? Where I'm turnkey application specific server appliance, maybe a little bit ahead of their time in the server world, and maybe a little bit behind NetApp when they started looking at how do I do a filer, but they were right at the end of the .com boom. And probably what killed the company was not lack of innovation, but the summer of 2000, when the market crashed and we were selling a lot of products, man, into the .com world. I think some of our biggest customers were, CDNs and big shops like that. Yep. They were, hyperscalers before there were hyperscalers. Oh, yeah. And the money just dried up. And it's hard to pivot from a $40 stock price and millions of dollars R&D budget to, my revenue just got a couple of zeros lopped off the end. A lot of companies died during that era. I will say Network Engines, their leadership transitioned and turned into something other than what we started off as. But, in terms of return on investment to the original investors, I think they did okay.
So we're going to do a reunion, and we need to get our butts up there for this reunion. We're not going to do another Harbor Cruise or whatever the heck we did after the IPO. We're going to do something more fun than that.
No, I got a whole list of people to invite. And this, a couple of months ago, I bought for about $80. No, it was $20, $40 for two, $20 each. One of the original Network Engine server appliances with a nice
purple bezel. I'm looking at my bezel right now, man. It's on my desk.
I gave you the bezel off the broken one. I'm still looking for the time to go turn the other one on and power it up and see what's
there. I played Half-Life on one of those servers, and man, it rocked. I'll tell you that.
All right. So before we lose everybody, I want to tease next week's conversation a little bit. This is the other big news that happened this week, and we didn't quite get to it, which is okay, because last time I think we talked a lot about Nutanix. Yeah. But IDC released the market share numbers for converged infrastructures for fourth quarter of last year, which was a $4 billion quarter for the CI market. I'm just going to tease this a little bit, right? It's very much kind of a two-horse race. They're counting, and I like what they're doing now. They're counting branded systems, which is kind of the turnkey appliance. Dell dominates that market with 28% of the share, which largely mirrors their server share, maybe within a point or two. Interestingly, Nutanix branded stuff is number two. At 14%. Now, we know that Dell sells a lot of Nutanix product, right? So IDC also counts the software behind the HCI market. And it's a much closer race there, because if you look there, it's natural that VMware is kind of dominating with 38%. But Nutanix is right there at 30%. And apart from those numbers, the other thing to look at, man, is HCI. It's clearly providing benefit, because this market grew at 55% quarter to quarter. 55% when the server market grow was like 17%.
12, I think, quarter to quarter,
But you look at within that market, who's growing, and I think the data center world is converging, pardon the pun, on a handful of vendors, right? So the market grew at 57%. VMware share grew at almost
90%. Yeah. That's crazy.
Right? Yeah. Nutanix is a little flat. We talked about their challenges last time. So I think next time, let's talk a little more about converged infrastructure now that we have these numbers behind us, and maybe we'll pull up kind of a year-long view of converged composable infrastructure. And maybe talk a little bit about composable too, because that confuses the conversation. That's where I want to go next week.
I'm down with it, baby. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So otherwise, let's let my mom get back to her driving and
let your mom get back to her driving.
Good luck at the ball game.
Me too, man. Have a good weekend.
Well, I'm just hoping my kid's not playing in a muddy field, because it has been raining since about 6 a.m. this morning. It's supposed to go away tonight.
Yeah, I'm hoping we don't play at all, actually. We're not in a good district. It's kind of, they're boring games, so I'd rather
I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. I'm about that selfish. Yeah. And do you ever find yourself, let me ask you this, because I feel guilty and my daughter doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can ask this question. Do you ever find yourself wishing for a lose so we can just go home?
Oh, yes, dude. Yes. Oh, during the tournament? Yes. I hate to say it. I mean, I sometimes actively root against the team. Yes.
I know. Last weekend I did too. We played Saturday and made it through Sunday. And then we started playing really well Sunday. And I'm like, oh, please don't. Please don't.
Go through it, guys. Go through it. Oh, damn it.
It was all I could do. It was all I could do not to cheer for the other team because I was ready.
Oh, heck yeah, man. It gets long and, oh, man. Especially during the summer when it's like 105 degrees and you're, you know, you just feel the cancer cells forming on your skin. Yeah.
Now that the world knows how shallow we all are, I'm going to go.
Hey, buddy. I'll see you, man.
Take care.